standing at the station and I'm waiting on my train to come. Well, I'm standing at the station and I'm waiting on my train to come. I can't stand around all day, you know I gotta run.
Hello, I'm Todd DeFeo, publisher and editor of RailFanning.org. A while ago, I spoke to the Tri-State Railway Historical Society about my book on the Northeast Corridor. I titled my presentation, Pivotal Moments on the Northeast Corridor. These presentations are fun to pull together and present, but the challenge is how to pack so much information about the Northeast Corridor's history into a short presentation. Do you focus on the engineering marvels, the early railroads that built the line's electrification, or the people who made it possible? I tried to pull in a few points about each. I wanted to share some highlights from that presentation, even if I'm delinquent in doing so. Luckily, I think this information is evergreen, and as interesting today as when I presented it. This podcast is an edited and condensed version of my presentation. Although some information didn't make the cut, I plan to use it in future episodes. I hope you enjoy the presentation. I think any opportunity that I have to talk about the Northeast Corridor makes any day a great day. Northeast Corridor is, of course, one of my favorite rail lines. That's why I wrote a book about it. Why else would you write a book about it, right? I just have a brief presentation here today, but I do want to make these presentations fun because, after all, I think it's important to remember that we are talking about trains, right? So we can't be too serious. We got to have a little bit of fun because, again, railroads. So as I pulled the presentation together, I started thinking about what is the right picture that I should start with? What is the single picture that best defines the Northeast Corridor? I spent a lot of time, more time than I should admit that I spent on that question, looking through a bunch of pictures. As I put together my book on the Northeast Corridor, I pulled together, I think, 180, 184 pictures total. And how do you find one that best defines for a cover slide? And I opted for a picture of the steam train going across the Delaware River. I thought it was a perfect symbol of the Northeast Corridor. And what I found so interesting about it is if you asked a dozen people, what picture would they go with? You probably get a dozen different answers. If you're the commuter who maybe is stuck on the evening train, either heading out of the city, you probably pick a stop train for a power outage. If you were somebody like me who maybe grew up along the Northeast Corridor in Metuchen, you might pick the train station as an example of the corridor. But I went with this picture because the stone bridge spanning the Delaware River, aside from it being a great postcard, I think it's really a symbol of the infrastructure of the Northeast Corridor. And the infrastructure up and down this line is just remarkable. We're going to touch briefly on the current state of the Northeast Corridor and the current infrastructure state. But if we stop and think about it for a moment, this line was an engineering marvel from the day that it was built. The railroads that built this line that we today know as the Northeast Corridor, they crossed rivers. They tunneled beneath rivers. They built incredible bridges. They built magnificent stations up and down the line. And we might not think about that today when we're taking the Acela, perhaps between Washington and Boston or points in between. But the Northeast Corridor really is an engineering marvel. Portions of the railroad are upwards of 190 years old, and it is still an integral part of our daily lives. I stopped when I was putting this together and started to think about what would the original engineers who built this line and the workers who built this line, what would they think about that if they knew that? Did they think that the work they were doing would be such a vital part of our infrastructure today and how we move from point A to point B? I don't know. I ponder that every time I put together one of these presentations. The other thing I'll say, the hardest part about giving a presentation on the Northeast Corridor is really the amount of time it would take to tell the entire history of the line. It could take days, months maybe even, to go all the different towns along the line, how the railroad impacted them and their relationship with the railroad. So what I try to do for this presentation today is focus on some of the highlights of the Northeast Corridor, moments in time that make this line the one that we know and love today. So as I sought to pull together some information and talk about the Northeast Corridor, I started with one very simple question. What is the Northeast Corridor? Not from a literal standpoint, but more figuratively, more philosophically, perhaps. And I think there's a few ways you could look at the Northeast Corridor. You could certainly look at it at the trains themselves. You've got the infrastructure. I talked a little bit about the infrastructure a moment ago. But perhaps most importantly, there's the communities themselves, the commerce, the movement of people that the Northeast Corridor facilitated. And to me, what I think is so interesting about the Northeast Corridor, when we look at it, is we think about it today perhaps as a single line, right? If you're in Boston and you're going to DC, or you're in New York and you're going to Philadelphia, it's just one line. We don't really think about it as multiple segments of a line. But the Northeast Corridor of today was not built as a single rail line. It was a disparate group of smaller railroads that really came together to make a single line that ultimately ran between Boston and Washington, D.C. It really wasn't until the 1960s that the Northeast Corridor actually got the name of the Northeast Corridor. And when we look back on this, and we're going to get a little bit deeper into this, there's some incredible visionaries from more than a century ago that had some just an incredible foresight to build this line and make it this important economic engine that it is today. And the legacy of the railroads that built this stretch of track really is visible if you're taking any portion of the Northeast Corridor. We're going to talk about Penn Station in New York City, the original Penn Station, and a little bit about the modern Penn Station. We're going to talk about the tunnels between New Jersey and New York City. Those are really an important part of the discussion when you're talking about the modern incarnation of the Northeast Corridor. It's a discussion point we're having today. And we're going to talk a lot about the electrification of the line, which really brought it into the modern railroad that we know that it is today. And the single point that I would say when we get to the Northeast Corridor and try to define it, I'd like to look back at ancient Rome for some inspiration here and say, Rome wasn't built in a day, and neither was the Northeast Corridor. And I say that only because the Northeast Corridor has evolved from its earliest days, and it continues to evolve even today. So we're going to take a step back in time for a moment and look at some of these smaller, lesser-known railroads. These are the railroads that really built the Northeast Corridor. In New Jersey, you've got great railroads like the Camden and Amboy, the New Jersey Railroad and Transportation Company, which joined together to become the United New Jersey Railroad and Canal Company. Of course, the Pennsylvania Railroad, which we're going to talk a lot about. But you've got railroads that built smaller portions of it that are just as vital. The Philadelphia and Trenton Railroad, the Connecting Railway, which built a section through Philadelphia. They built these small little portions of track. Maybe didn't necessarily realize just how important the work that they were doing that would ultimately fold up into something like the Northeast Corridor. You've got some incredible engineering marvels that they completed as well, cuts like the Bergen Cut. But what I found so interesting about it, we think it's just how indispensable of a line it is today. And we think people from day one must have been taking it to get, you know, all the way down to Washington, D.C. And that wasn't the case. It took 30 years after the start of the Northeast Corridor, if you put the starting point at about 1830. It took about 30 years to really get through trains running all the way from New York to Washington. And of course, the line really catapulted forward in 1871 when the Pennsylvania Railroad came in and took over the companies that were operating the Northeast Corridor. And I think when you look about efficiencies and sort of maybe the modern, you know, flexibility that a corridor like this provides us, we think this is incredible, right? You can be in New York City, you can be in the heart of New York City, and you can jump on a train and a few hours later, you can be in the nation's capital. Or if you want to go north, you can go to Boston. But we think about these earliest trains. The idea of going from New York to Washington, D.C. was incredible, but it took a long time. It was not an efficient line. We think about, maybe we complain about it today when our commuter train on the Northeast Corridor gets stuck, if the power goes out or for whatever reason it's stopped. And that's a minor disturbance that we might be encountering, but it is still a very reliable corridor. And I mentioned the Pennsylvania Railroad. We're going to go a lot deeper on the Pennsylvania Railroad, but they really modernized the line and helped build it into what we know of today. This is, after all, the standard railroad of the world. Hang on to that thought as we go through this presentation. Quickly, I'll talk a little bit about the infrastructure projects and mention some of the infrastructure projects that they did. They really helped modernize the road. And they operated this line for about a century until 1968, ushering a little bit more of the modern era. The Pennsylvania Railroad was chartered in, as its name might suggest, Pennsylvania in 1846. Now, we could really do an entire presentation on the Pennsylvania Railroad. And really what I wanted to focus more on when it comes to the Pennsylvania Railroad is its role and its impact in shaping the Northeast Corridor into the line that we know of today. If you could imagine in the 1890s and early 1900s, the Northeast Corridor, or the railroads that ultimately became the Northeast Corridor, operated at grade. That means there were grade crossings up and down the line. And if you could imagine today, that would be incredibly dangerous. And it was very dangerous at that point in time as well. And the Pennsylvania Railroad recognized this. And they undertook a program to elevate their tracks up and down the line. In 1893, for example, the first train passed over an elevated trestle in Elizabeth, New Jersey. Around this time, the railroad also elevated its tracks in Newark, New Jersey, opening a new station there. Not the current Penn Station that we know of today, but a predecessor station. And up and down the line, the railroad undertook these incredible projects to elevate the line. In 1901, they announced a huge plan. This is the same time that they're getting ready to announce building a tunnel in New York City. They announced plans to elevate tracks through Wilmington, Delaware. As part of this, the railroad needed to build a new station, the station which still stands today. A few years later, in 1913, the Pennsylvania Railroad opened a new $60,000 station in Rahway. And up and down the line, there were new stations. The elevation of the line really had two benefits for the railroad. It helped from a safety standpoint, but it also helped run trains more rapidly up and down the line. And the Railway Age, a publication that is still around today, in 1907, took note of this and noted that the improvements are going to save several minutes in the running time between Philadelphia and Baltimore, marking another step in the accomplishment of the purpose of the Pennsylvania Railroad to eventually reduce its running time between New York and Washington to 4 hours. We're down to 4 hours. It's a little quicker today, but 4 hours in the first decade of the 1900s. Remarkable. If you think about it, actually 70 years earlier, it took 5 or 6 hours to travel just between New York City and Philadelphia. And here we are going 4 hours, a much longer way. It's just remarkable. And these improvements ultimately played into tunneling beneath the Hudson River. It would be hard to sit and say if there was one single project that had the biggest impact on the Northeast Corridor. I don't know. We could have a great debate of what was the single project that was the biggest impact on the corridor. This would certainly be in the running. And it wasn't just tunneling beneath the river, as if that wasn't impressive enough. The railroad also decided it was going to build this massive structure in the heart of Manhattan, Penn Station, which, if you can believe it, before the Penn Station of today it's in the basement of Madison Square Garden, although they're working to change that. This was a massive, massive structure that let in incredible amounts of light. And it was simply named Pennsylvania Station. What else would you name it? Now, I mentioned a moment ago the Pennsylvania Railroad having long sought to bring its trains into the city. And it wasn't just as easy as building a tunnel. It sounds, maybe it's not easy, but you say, hey, I'm just going to build a tunnel, right? Well, it took a lot. This is the culmination of really 20 years of work, of serious work. I mean, they hired an engineer in the 1890s to build a bridge. Even before the Pennsylvania Railroad got involved, there was an industrialist named DeWitt Clinton Haskins who tried to tunnel underneath the river starting in 1879. He spent a decade trying to tunnel under the river, a decade. And he ultimately, after several blowouts, gave up on his project, which of course led the Pennsylvania Railroad to hire an engineer to build a bridge. Other railroads thought that was too expensive, so they abandoned it. And ultimately what happened is the Pennsylvania Railroad never really gave up on the idea, but they weren't as active. And it took another 10 years until Alexander J. Cassatt announced his plan to tunnel beneath the Hudson River. The tunnel, though, it posed a lot of problems. Again, as if building a tunnel wasn't enough. One of the biggest problems was you couldn't run steam trains through it. A couple reasons. Exhaust in the tunnel, but also steam trains were disallowed in New York City starting in 1908. And so if you go back to the Cassatt story when he was in the Gare d'Orsay in Paris, he was watching the railroad there use electric trains. Of this, Cassatt said that a tunnel line operated by electricity is the most practical, economical, and the best both for the interests of the railroad and of the city. This is a quote pulled from the New York Tribune newspaper. And once they went beneath the river and pulled into the city, I mentioned a moment ago, Penn Station, a remarkable station. The tunnels and Penn Station opened in November of 1910. When it opened, the New York Times at this moment noted, as the crowd passed through the doors into the vast concourse, on every hand were heard exclamations of wonder, for none had any idea of the architectural beauty of the new structure. It's not exactly the reaction that first-time visitors to Penn Station today have, but this was a remarkable structure. And I think I jokingly said about first-time visitors, I don't know that a lot of people today realize what a grand structure once stood here. It started to change a little bit. And of course, Amtrak recently opened the new Moynihan train hall. And Penn Station is starting to change, but will it ever go back to the glory of 110 years ago? It remains to be seen, I suppose. What I find so interesting about this moment on the Northeast Corridor in and out of New York City is the electrification piece of it. If we look at the corridor today, it's all the way electric, actually, between Boston and Washington, D.C., where these cell trains run. But it wasn't at this point in time. It was really only electric in a small portion of it. Several years later, about 18 years later, 1928, think of this for a moment. This is less than a year before the stock market crash and the start of the Great Depression. A gentleman by the name of William Atterbury, who was then the president of Pennsylvania, announced yet another bold plan for the railroad and Northeast Corridor. He announced a plan to eliminate steam trains and electrify the entire Northeast Corridor. well, what was then the Northeast Corridor, but ultimately it would become between New York and Washington, D.C. But his initial plan was between New York City and Wilmington, Delaware. And the railroad, if you could imagine it, estimated that the project would cost $100 million and it would take 8 years to complete. I don't know if we could electrify the entire line today in 8 years, but he said it would take 8 years to complete. In fact, by 1931, a portion of it was electrified. Locomotives were pulling trains between Wilmington, Delaware, and Trenton, New Jersey. Of course, that was just one small section of it. Other sections would follow over the years. And in January 1933, engineer George Gould sat at the controls of locomotive number 207. It was the first electric train to operate between New York City to Philadelphia. But that wasn't the end. In 1934, after successfully electrifying the line between New York City and Wilmington, Atterbury announced a massive project that would employ at least 25,000 workers. 25,000 workers. They were going to electrify the rest of the line, bringing to fruition his plan to electrify the entire, effectively then, the Pennsylvania Railroad, I guess I should say, portion of the Northeast Corridor between New York and Washington, D.C. Think about this for a moment. Anybody who's a fan of U.S. history recognizes that in 1934, this is in the heart of the Great Depression, the middle of the Great Depression, and they're going to hire 25,000 workers to electrify the line. And what I think is so fascinating about this particular moment, the electrification of it, if you're standing there in 1934 and you're looking at the Pennsylvania Railroad that two decades earlier built a tunnel, they built a tunnel underneath the Hudson River. Now they've electrified the line between New York and Washington, D.C. How could this railroad ever come to an end? How could this railroad ever manage to not go on forever? And yet somehow is actually nearing the end of its history, if you can believe it, as World War II came and went. As early as 1957, a decade really after World War II, the Pennsylvania began merger talks with its longtime competitor, the New York Central Railroad. It didn't happen immediately, but ultimately it did in 1968. The New York Central and the Pennsylvania Railroad merged to create the Penn Central Railroad. There were a lot of factors that led to this, the demise ultimately of the Pennsylvania Railroad and sort of the tough times that railroads encountered in the late 60s and into the 70s. You could look at some of the Federal Highway Acts that were passed in the 1950s, the completion of the interstate system in the mid-1950s. Commercial air travel certainly didn't help. And ultimately, the Penn Central that emerged didn't just combine the New York Central and the Pennsylvania Railroad. It also took in the New York, New Haven, and Hartford Railroad. And it was a very short-lived railroad. It operated from 1968 until 1976, at which point in time Conrail came into existence. A few years before that, Amtrak came into existence to take over the passenger rails. Ultimately, Conrail took over the freight portion of it, and Amtrak took over the passenger portion of it. The Penn Central was... it's a fascinating railroad. That could be another topic for another day, of course. Even though it was a short-lived railroad, you could probably have a great presentation on the Penn Central. It struggled from day one. It never really merged all the disparate railroads together into one cohesive unit. At one point in time, the railroad was actually losing $1 million a day, if you can believe it. And even though the railroad only started in 1968, in 1970, it had already declared bankruptcy. And ultimately what happened is Congress stepped in to pass several pieces of legislation. There's the 3R Act and the 4R Act are quite boring pieces of legislation, so I won't go too deep into it. But as I mentioned to a moment ago, it led to the creation of Amtrak and Conrail. Conrail, interestingly, although it was really only freight, it did operate commuter railroads up and down the line in New Jersey Transit. Before New Jersey Transit, for example, it operated the trains in and out of New York City. And ultimately, the creation of Conrail and Amtrak really ushered in the modern era that we know, which you could look at starting in the 1980s, once sort of all these different commuter railroads came into being. And I think if we look at the modern era, as we move into the creation of Amtrak and the operating of different freight railroads of Conrail, it was such a difficult time for railroads. We think this is a great moment in time where we're creating something new and we've got there's going to be a better day on the horizon here. And ultimately what happened in the latter half of the 1970s was really a difficult era for railroads. And if you look at it in the context of the Northeast Corridor, it was a really difficult time for the corridor. But if we look back on this 40 years later, we think of the Northeast Corridor largely as a passenger railroad. But today it is still a freight railroad. with a couple notable exceptions, of course. There's actually four freight railroads that operate over the corridor. CSX, Norfolk Southern, a version of Conrail. It's a little bit different Conrail than it was in the 1970s. And the Providence and Worcester, which carry about 350,000 carloads of freight over the corridor every year. And there's still about 250 businesses that ship or receive freight on the corridor. And this is really the perfect segue to what comes next for the Northeast Corridor and the modern line that we know and love today. But for so many people, their touch point with the Northeast Corridor is the commuter element of it. You've got the Long Island Railroad, New Jersey Transit, MARC down in and around the nation's capital in Baltimore area, Massachusetts Bay Transportation Authority up in Boston, Metro North, Shoreline East in and around the New York City region, SEPTA in Philadelphia. These are the railroads that operate commuter services over the Northeast Corridor today. In fact, more than 3,400 commuter trains with more than 1.1 million riders travel across the Northeast Corridor every single day. Or I guess I should say at this point in time, did before COVID. We'll see what the numbers are as we fully emerge in the post-COVID world in that part of the country. In some ways, what we're seeing is the midpoint of the Northeast Corridor. We've talked a lot about the history so far, the building of the tunnel into New York City, the building of Penn Station, and a lot of these improvements up and down the line. But I think we'd be remiss at this moment in time if we didn't talk about the one common theme that we've seen throughout every moment on the Northeast Corridor. The one common theme is change. The Northeast Corridor is ever evolving and ever changing. It's evolved since day one. It's never stood still. It's constantly been upgraded. There's been tracks that have been added. It was double tracked and then triple tracked and quadruple tracked along portions of it. Stations, in fact, have come and gone over the years. You could look in New Jersey at stations like South Newark and North Railway. They've closed. Others have evolved as we've changed how we move as people. If you think of Metro Park Station, for example, in New Jersey, it was built for commuters. It was a commuting station. You've got other stations, such as Secaucus Junction, which have opened and allowed for us to better move from one rail line to another rail line. And of course, when you look at the Northeast Corridor of today, as Bob Dylan might say, your old road is rapidly aging. The Northeast Corridor, I alluded to at the beginning of the presentation, portions of it are upwards of 190 years old. It's an incredibly old section of infrastructure within our country. And we're at a moment in time where we could see perhaps some of the greatest changes that the Northeast Corridor has ever encountered throughout its history. There's plans to replace aging infrastructure. I didn't get into this particular tunnel, but the Baltimore and Potomac Tunnel in Baltimore. It's a $4 billion project to modernize that tunnel and allow for the better movement of trains, allow us to stay more on time on our trains. You've got the $11.6 billion Gateway program, which includes replacing the tunnels beneath the Hudson River. The tunnels that were built 111 years ago that are still in place today. And so the Northeast Corridor itself is constantly evolving. Now, these are just sort of physical features of the Northeast Corridor, but perhaps the thing we think about when we look at trains as rail fans is the trains themselves are constantly changing and evolving. And I think if you look at the corridor throughout history, you could find moments in time where we said the next great train is about to come on the scene. You could go back to the 1930s and the GG1 locomotive. The Pennsylvania Railroad placed the first GG1 locomotive into service in 1935. That operated between New York City and Washington. And what I think is so fascinating about the Northeast Corridor is when you look at the story of the Northeast Corridor and the history of the Northeast Corridor, it is in so many ways the perfect example of railroad history across this country. You could look at railroads really in just about any corner of the country and look at their impact on the communities that they serve, how they help people move from point A to point B, how they facilitated commerce, how at times they were their connection with the outside world. And the same is true for the Northeast Corridor. We maybe don't think about it as much today, but if you think of the Northeast section of the country, it's so densely populated. You don't think about the Northeast Corridor passing through small little communities, but that's what it was initially. It was the connection to the outside world. And the Northeast Corridor itself is in so many ways the story of ingenuity, of grit and determination, of the people who envisioned the line and the people who built the line. It's really a story of visionaries and communities. And anybody who has ever taken a train over the Northeast Corridor, even for just a stop or two, has been a part of the corridor's history. It's fascinating because it originated from the idea of finding a better way to travel. Pretty much that's the story of any railroad, right? How do we get from point A to point B quicker? And I look back to something that the directors of the New Jersey Railroad wrote in 1840. Formerly, the passage between Philadelphia and New York was performed with great personal discomfort and no small hazard of life and limb. Merchandise was transported from city to city at great expense and subject to all the difficulties and dangers of a coasting voyage. Now, passengers are carried from city to city during the most inclement season with nearly the same comfort as they enjoy at their own firesides. I'd be the first to admit that some days a trip along the Northeast Corridor may not feel as comfortable as our own firesides, but surely it beats the 20-hour wagon ride that people had to endure to travel between Philadelphia and New York City just a few decades before the Northeast Corridor came into existence. I hope you enjoyed this presentation. Stay tuned for additional podcasts based on recent presentations I've given. For railfanning.org, I'm Todd DeFeo. Be sure to visit railfanning.org for more news, features, and photos from the rails.